This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a cabaret show with an opera diva, conversation with a celebrated artist, or a new music festival highlighting the squeeze box, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. I'm your host, Diane Mack. Internationally renowned opera star Marisol Montalvo kicks off the star-studded sixth season of the Broadway at Noka series with the New Orleans debut of her acclaimed new cabaret show, Mad Scene, an autobiographical look at the challenges faced by Montalvo on the operatic stage, written and directed by New Orleans actor Jeffrey Roberson, a.k.a. drag queen superstar Varla Jean Merman. Marisol and Jeffrey are here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, this is not the first time you two have worked together on a stage project. Tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and how you came together for this new work.
Well, Marisol, actually, I went to school with Mark Rotali, who is producing this. They went to music school together, and then Mark and I became friends, and Mark started representing me. And I used to do some classical concerts every year in Provincetown as a benefit for the AIDS support group there. I would have guests, real opera singers, because, you know, I try to fake it a little bit. But that is what was so great. We got to work together. We would sing duets together. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was I was only being an opera singer for a day or two. To really be an opera singer, not only is it so much work to study and to learn your craft, but then to take care of your instrument and the things you have to do in your life, which can drive you insane.
Yes.
Because you're always worried about the high note. And that's really what a lot of the show that we're doing together is about, that it can drive you mad.
I can't do what normal people do. You know, I can't go after work and go and unwind at a restaurant or a bar or anything like that. I have to really protect my instrument. I can't speak on the phone too much. I have to, in a certain way, isolate myself to ensure that I sound well for the next day or for the performance. And of course, you know, I think one of the other massive challenges about being an opera singer is the travel. You're alone all over the world by yourself. And so you're kind of doubly isolated in a way, you know.
And that's something a lot of us don't really think about.
You have to be built for it.
You need to be like a real operative and have two Pomeranians in your handbag.
I've kind of resisted the urge to buy the dog, the soprano and the dog thing. But I'm getting close.
But it's really a fascinating story because we decided Marisol would come see my cabaret shows and she really wanted to do something different other than opera.
Yeah.
She wanted to do a cabaret show. And when we were talking about it and listening to her stories, they were so fascinating and just riveting to me. And she's just such a natural comedian that it was so easy to take her stories and put them in a format. She's, you know, a Puerto Rican girl from the Bronx. That is not your usual opera singer. So there's a lot of funny things that happened for her just finding out that she was an opera singer. You know, a big thing that we talk about is that Marisol was in music school, but then she failed out of music school and still was able to have a career. But having to learn everything that she realized she should have learned, having to learn it later, was a very big price for her to pay because, you know, she didn't learn the technique and she had lost her voice, had to have surgeries, got addicted, and I know this sounds crazy, to prednisone, which is anti-inflammatory. This is some great stories. And having surgery with Dr. Zeidels, which, you know, did Adele's surgery and tried to fix Julie Andrews and Steven Tyler. It is some fascinating stories. And they're so funny. And I didn't have to do much. You know,
it's not true, Jeff.
But to take her stories. But also, you get to hear all these amazing opera arias kind of put together into a 70-minute show. Mad Scenes from Ophelia, the Lucia Mad Scene, a lot of musical theater all put together in a very tight show.
Marisol, take us back in time. Tell us about your big debut at Carnegie Hall.
My big debut. So I remember kind of walking out and it was all white, some gold, and that's all I remember. But I remember I finished and it was successful and I got good critics. I kind of snuck a recording. And I remember listening to it all night because I couldn't believe that I actually did that. It was magical. I had been out of the country for 10 years. I was over in Europe, you know, building my career. And Christoph Eschenbach brought me back to the United States to make my debut. It was pretty incredible. And my family came. That's a funny story, actually, because we're Puerto Rican. And they don't know anything about opera. I don't come from a musical family. And they come in and they go, wow, this is nice. Do you get to keep the dress? Do you get paid for that? Who's the guy with the stick? What does he do? You know, it's real. It's very humbling. They keep my feet on the floor.
Do you have a favorite performance?
I love doing the role of Lulu. It's a contemporary opera from Alban Berg. I kind of have a different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's quite the survivor in the sense that, you know, people kind of look at her as like this Lolita type of personality. But I find her as quite a, you know, a very realistic, accepting person of who she is. She was a child prostitute and then was bought by a doctor, pedophile, and then educated by him, but also, you know, mistreated and abused by him. And then he sold her to someone else who beat her. And then she survived him. And then she got married off again. And she just kind of always accepts who she is. And everyone around her tries to make her into what they want her to be. But she's always quite grounded in who she is and quite a survivor. So it's very fulfilling to do this role. And I've been doing it for the last 15 years.
And also, not only has she seen the role, she has to be practically naked doing it.
Well,
and the opera in the end, she's killed by Jack the Ripper. It's a very strange opera. It's a very strange opera.
But there's a lot of drama. It's 3 hours. It's hell. The challenge of getting through it is pretty exhilarating and exhausting.
Marisol is really quite well known for modern music. She mostly sings modern music. Mm-hmm. And there's a big thing in the show we talk about, because every classical opera that people know, arias, we know from TV, we know from commercials, we know from movies. We know the best singers in the entire world singing this that are captured. So when you hear someone that doesn't sound quite like that, you know they're not as good as that recording.
Right.
And so it's so much pressure on an opera singer to try to match what people know, because you know what that's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
And so she chose to sing modern music originally because nobody knew what it sounded like.
<That's>
and
great.
It took a lot of the pressure off
yeah.
her. She's not a household name just because mostly she does modern music, which is not popular. I mean, and it's so funny because we as a society love modern architecture.
Modern art.
But modern music has not really excelled the way those other art forms have.
But it's great because I can be part of the creative process. And people just don't bring their preconceived ideas to it.
So she gets to do original operas.
It's very freeing.
Now, you had quite an experience in a role that you thought that you were perfect for, that you wanted to do. I believe it was West Side Story.
Yes, of course. I'm a Puerto Rican girl, but I'm also a black Puerto Rican girl. So it was interesting to go to – I was living in Europe, and basically I always thought Maria was my role. You know, that's me, right? You know, I know what Puerto Rican people look like, but because of Natalie Wood, that's what all Puerto Rican women are supposed to look like. So when it was time for me to do Maria in West Side Story in Austria, basically they were like looking for a white Maria. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm a New Yorker, I'm American, I'm Puerto Rican, and you want to take a Swiss girl?
And they just thought, you know, that she was like, too tan to
be. Yeah, they really did. But I mean, it's a long journey, and it's a marathon. It is not a sprint to be an opera singer. I'm still learning. You just don't stop. I think what makes it so challenging to be an opera singer is that expectation of perfection. It's not in other places. I'm not saying that, of course, you're not a perfectionist, but the standard's different. It's more emotional. People want to be moved in a way. I mean, you literally have to be perfect. Technically, they put this on you, not even on yourself. The business puts it on you. You must be technically perfect. And then on top of that, have all the ability to emote and all that other stuff. And it's really daunting. I found this very challenging. I still do, because I feel, you know, you have to fail. You have to be able to make mistakes to grow. So, you know, it's live and learn. Inevitably, you will make mistakes. And that's okay. I say it's okay. You know, you have to fall down to know how to get up.
So we're in for an entertaining evening where we will learn some new things about what it means to be an opera diva.
I hope so.
Yes, you will. Something you never dreamed about.
Soprano Marisol Montalvo and writer Jeffrey Roberson, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Mad Scene kicks off the Broadway at NOCA series Thursday, November 1st in NOCA's Lupin Theater. More info is online at BroadwayNOLA.com. In the mid-1950s, New Orleans artist George Dunbar was hailed in New York City as among the best of his generation. Now 91, living in Slidell, he's ready to release a new collection. He tells WWNO's Eileen Fleming that creating new pieces is essential to sharpening his skill.
George Dunbar walked into his sleek modern home on Bayou Bonfuca, apologizing for being a few minutes late. He was busy in a studio down a gravel path, packing up selected works for his new show, opening this weekend at the Callan Contemporary Gallery on Julia Street. He calls the new work his Surge series.
In the studio, we take at least one day a week, a few days a month, to experiment on using different materials and so forth.
The we he mentions includes two assistants, Lizzie Shelby and Ryan Gentiloni, who were busy getting the new pieces carefully packed up for the trip to the gallery. The new pieces are three-dimensional canvases with thin layers of colored clay that's cooked to a paint-like consistency, then scraped to reveal the hidden colors. It's a technique he's mastered over the years, most notably in his work of the 90s in distressed gold leaf. The Surge series may have been inspired by his expansive water view.
I live on a bayou, and I certainly have seen large clumps of debris, and so I think from nature you unconsciously draw some of the shapes and colors. If I look across at the marsh over here, I sometimes see it where it's layered. You look at one layer as one color and another layer above it, and it's most probably unconsciously part of my palette.
That palette has been developing since he left New York City in the 1950s to return to New Orleans and care for his sick mother. He started a family and worked as a land developer to make ends meet. He hadn't expected to find accomplished contemporary artists in the city, and together they opened their own space, called the Orleans Gallery in the French Quarter.
I'm very proud of this. We were showing in locations that really were decorators' places. About six of us decided we wanted a real gallery, a gallery that had a lot of sterile space. That's what artists really like. They don't want to compete with lampshades and things of that kind. And I think it really was the first truly contemporary space. It was all painted white like a gallery should be. You really wouldn't have thought that in a city that sort of people think of as being so connected with the old, that there would be that much interest with people who wanted to really participate in contemporary art.
He's complementing the new Surge work at the Callan Gallery with pieces from his Rag series from the 1980s. Made from rolled-up cloth and acrylic, both demonstrate what he calls action art, depicting energy and movement.
It's much more fun, I think, as an artist to try to reinvent yourself, because if you really get down to just doing the same types of things over and over again, it's really not as much fun. And the other aspect is that there's more of an opportunity to discover something that is really, really different. I believe very strongly that we're going to see within the next 5 or 6 years, that's soon, people using many more materials than they're using now and calling them paintings. I don't think that we're going to really think in terms of painting as just using oil colors and acrylic colors and things of that kind. I think we're going to use other materials.
Well, that's right up your alley.
Well, I would like to believe that I'm part of that movement that is making that change for everybody. I'd like to believe that I think that by seeing this show, you can see, you'll see one thing. You'll see paintings that you wouldn't ordinarily feel were paintings before.
George Dunbar, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
The public is invited to meet George and see his work at a reception Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Callan Contemporary Gallery, 518 Julia Street in New Orleans. The Alluvian exhibit runs through Christmas Day. In Slidell for Inside the Arts, I'm Eileen Fleming.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNN New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Southwest Louisiana is known for Zydeco and Cajun music as the accordion reigns king. In the Crescent City, not so much. But that may be changing as the inaugural New Orleans Accordion Festival kicks off this week with diverse musical styles. Joining me to talk about this exciting adventure are musicians Stephanie Reed and David Simmons. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You know, this sounds like fun. Why should New Orleans have an accordion festival?
There are four of us organizing this festival, and we're all working accordion players. We just love this instrument, and there are accordion festivals actually all over the world, but as far as we know, there's never been one in New Orleans. So we just want to bring a bunch of great accordion players together in all different styles and just celebrate this instrument that we love and all the different cultures and styles that it represents.
And just how did the festival become reality?
We've got a great accordion community here already. For the past, I think it's about 4 years, we've been attending an annual party hosted by one of our members called the Skinny Squeezy. We get together a week before Mardi Gras. A lot of us have been getting to know each other, and it's really a nice group of people who play, and it's very collaborative. So we thought we would formalize those gatherings into a festival.
And what is it that people find so attractive about the instrument?
It's a very fun instrument to play because it's right on your body and you feel the vibrations when you play and the bellows breathe like you're singing. Now, as far as why people like to listen to it, I think that the accordion means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. There's certainly a nostalgic quality. A lot of people, when I talk to them about the accordion, they'll say, oh, well, my auntie had one and it's in the attic now. And, you know, or my grandfather used to play when I was a kid. A lot of people have some sort of connector to the instrument. We're encouraging them to go in the attic and get that instrument out. Keep it alive.
Is it difficult to play?
Well, it's difficult to play well. one of the nice things about the accordion is that it's really not that difficult to play on a basic level because unlike, say, the trumpet or the violin, you don't really have to worry about intonation or learning how to produce a beautiful tone. So on that level, it does have some appeal to beginners. Sure. But of course, like any instrument, you know, there's no limit to how far you can take it if you put in the time.
What can you play for us?
We have a duo called Accordionistan, and we play my compositions. And we thought we might play a piece I wrote called 70 Miles to London. I was living in Vermont at the time, and I wrote it for a production of a stage adaptation of Oliver Twist that I was composing original music for. The accordion is part of a family of instruments called free reed instruments. This includes harmonicas, concertinas, harmoniums, and the free reed is a very ancient Asian technology. We know that they were in China 3,000 years ago. They may go back even farther than that. There's a whole class of Chinese instruments that use this type of reed, and there's an instrument called a sheng, and someone brought the sheng to Europe sometime in the 1700s, we think, and instrument makers started experimenting with free reeds. And it was actually 1829, the first thing called an accordion was patented in Vienna. And there were a few other similar instruments but that were coming out around that time that used bellows to push air through free reeds. But the accordion was born in 1829 in Vienna. The first accordions were very, very simple. Since then, there's been just endless experimentation. The instruments have gotten more and more and more elaborate to the point now where an accordion like the ones that we play, a big piano accordion, as they're called, with the piano-style keys, has over 4,000 individual parts. So they're very complex pieces of technology.
And David would know because he repairs accordions in town.
What can we look forward to at the festival?
Friday night, we'll start the festival off with a dance party at the Siberia Lounge. We have three acts, klezmer, Cajun, and zydeco. We've got the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars, Bruce Degrepont, and Corey Ledet. We think this will be a really fun way to get people out and dance and celebrate accordion dance music across a variety of styles.
Yeah. And it's three world-class bands for the price of one.
Saturday during the day, we're centered around the French Market and Dutch Alley, and we have free performances on two stages by local accordion groups. There's a lot represented. We've got Balkan, Gypsy Jazz, Latin, Cajun, Blues.
Also something called Big Brass Circus Rock.
Oh, we're excited about that.
And what is that?
That band is the Dirty Bourbon River Show. They are just a real fun band to see live. Our headline performance is on Saturday night at the New Orleans Jazz Museum, the old U.S. Mint, and we're bringing in a multi-Grammy award-winning arranger and accordionist, Gil Goldstein, and he'll be performing with Johnny Vodonkovich.
Great jazz accordionist, legendary arranger and pianist in the jazz world, works with Bobby McFerrin, lots of great people.
On November 4th, the Sunday, we are dedicating some time to community programming. where we'll have a few events where people can learn more about the accordion in general. So we will have an accordion petting zoo where we'll bring the instrument out, let people try it out, do some very rudimentary lessons on just how it works. And we'll also be having a free screening of a movie called Accordions Rising, a film that looks at contemporary accordion music and how it's still relevant in the culture today. We'll also do a brief history of the accordion, and David will host a repair workshop for people who do play in town. You know, what happens when you're on the road and something goes wrong? There are some quick fixes to help you out, which should be fun. And hopefully we'll get some stories from people, too, about things that have happened to them on the road. And then we're going to end the whole thing with an all-inclusive accordion jam session. So anyone who has a free read can bring it out, and we will socialize and, for the last hour, play together.
Well, tell me, how versatile is the instrument? I'm hearing blues, I'm hearing zydeco, I'm hearing Cajun, klezmer.
Oh, yeah. It's an incredibly versatile instrument. There's a lot of classical accordion out there, too. It's all over the map.
We've seen musicians take it into rock and into, you know, more contemporary styles, too. This festival definitely captures a lot of that range.
What is the best way to enjoy this newcomer to the city's festival landscape?
There's a lot of music happening. Hopefully people can take a look at the lineup and bookmark some of their favorites to go check out, especially the free shows.
How many musicians are involved?
Probably about 20 accordionists, but then they have bands with them, so it's significant.
A formidable number of musicians.
Yeah.
Stephanie Reed and David Simmons with the New Orleans Accordion Festival. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
The New Orleans Accordion Festival runs November 2nd through 4th in venues across the city. More info is online at NOLAAccordionFestival.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.